You're listening to The Dan Nichols Show.
Go back 6 months, if that, and there probably wouldn't have been a great chance, in all honesty, of my guest this week being on the show. Why on earth would I have a pharmaceutical salesman come and join me on a world-renowned celebrity talk show? Well, fast forward today, and I'm lucky I've been able to get into his diary, because he is one of the hottest properties in South African literature. In fact, if you walk into Exclusive Books, he sits firmly in the top 10. Now, that might be because he and his friends keep positioning the books there, but I think it's actually because it is a wonderful story, a very honest, a very vulnerable story of somebody who's been through an awful lot, from open heart surgery at the age of 28 to a diagnosis with cancer to battling with anxiety, something many do but few openly admit, and putting all of that together into what really is one of the most rewarding reads you will come across this year. So with great, great pleasure, a warm welcome, Brandon Fairweather.
Thank you, Dan Nichols. Really appreciate being here.
It's fantastic to have you in this context because you have, like all of us, a story to tell. Not everybody has the story that has quite the ups and downs of yours, and not everybody actually decides to do what so many think they'll do one day, is actually write that book. So before we delve into this actual story, first of all, congratulations for getting it done. And how rewarding, how cathartic has it been to have all of this journaling, all of this this story of your adventure and misadventure put down into a book, and now walk through a shopping mall, see Exclusive Books, and there it is sitting in the bestseller shelves.
Yeah, thank you so much, Dan. Like, it's been a great honor and a privilege, and I really enjoyed the process. But firstly, I've got to say, I don't know how you got access to the Exclusive Book security footage, because yeah, it's definitely my friends. The book can't possibly be that good, but yeah, jokes aside, like, it's been, like you say, cathartic for me. It started out with that being the main reason, just to get thoughts down onto paper, onto a PC, and then, you know, discover this purpose in the process. And that's really what the book is about. It's kind of this concept of turning your pain, or finding purpose in your pain. And there's obviously been a lot that's gone on, but I really have actually enjoyed the process. And as it evolved from, like you say, almost a diary of thoughts, it became something where I was like, well, this could actually help somebody else. And I think that was the thing that kept me going personally in the lowest of lows. And secondly, became something exciting where, you know, every trauma, every setback became another chapter. And that's literally how I looked at it. I mean, obviously not always. I mean, there were moments where I wasn't feeling that way. But yeah, just really been a blessing to put it out and to just make it through these things, because a lot of other people maybe wouldn't have got that far.
We do live in an increasingly demanding, often unkind and toxic world where, for different reasons, so many people are going through so much. And I think this is a wonderful antidote to all of that. And it can give people a lot of hope and inspiration, even if they haven't gone through quite as much as you have, because you have taken blow after blow after blow, starting with, and I did some medical research here, I didn't get very far, but the aortic valve issue that you had, it sounds like a particularly bizarre episode of ER, but this was something that was life-threatening, that was going to dictate, or had the potential to dictate, you know, how your life was going to play out. So when do you discover this? How do you deal with that? And how does that have an initial impact on who you are?
Sure. So, I mean, technically speaking, I was born with a bicuspid aortic valve. So on your valve, you have three leaflets, and mine was only had two, basically. So that leads to a slight leak on the valve, which means you don't, it's not entirely life-threatening from the start, but the doctors from an early age told my parents that I would have to have corrective surgery done. But in their minds, sort of at this age that I am now, which is 43, they said, you know, plus 40, you know, that sort of era. And I think I led quite an active and healthy lifestyle. You know, I never ever smoked a cigarette, don't really drink much alcohol, like the odd glass of wine.
Yeah, that was your problem earlier, I think.
I think so. Should have been thinning the blood a bit more. But yeah, they said from birth, you know, you're going to have this corrected. So we're like, all good. And, you know, it's not like it really limited me too much. I could feel like when I was a kid, and even as a teenager, you know, doing cross country or sort of high intensity type of workouts, I was somewhat limited, but it didn't stop me from doing it. So only when I got a bit older in my 20s, and obviously the surgery happened when I was 28, about a year before that, I was mountain biking with a friend in the south of Johannesburg, and we had tackled some pretty daunting hills and just found I was not up to scratch and just not feeling great. Ended up in ICU actually that day. because there was an issue. And from that was kind of this discovery of, okay, this is going to have to happen, you know, sooner rather than later. So that process could have taken a year, 5 years. They never really said when I would need to do it, but just that I would need to pay attention to this again because it's kind of ominous and going to be happening quite soon. So so we ended up doing the surgery, and that in itself was a real gift. It was very smooth. Everything went, you know, as smooth as it could go. But obviously, leading up to it, there was a lot of anxiety, and afterwards, actually, surprisingly, when people think, well, it's fixed now, you've got nothing to worry about, there was deferred pains, there was physio, there was other things happening. And I think I just lost trust in my body. So, that began a journey of a couple of years of really grueling confusion and just kind of learning to trust my body again while trying to learn to exercise and be in the industry that I'm in as well. So that's kind of added some heat to it, yeah.
I remember when Robin Williams took his life and there was a lot of talk about his depression, and the comment that often comes up in that kind of space, and it's an ill-formed comment, but it's one you can understand the origins of, which is, well, you know, he's got lots of money, he's very funny, he's got famous friends. What does he have to be depressed about? Mm. And that understanding and anxiety fits into that same space. Mm. Hey, you've just had your life saved. Your heart's just been fixed. He should be skipping down the road, and it's all champagne and roses. Yeah. And yet anxiety doesn't work that way. Yeah. And you can't just tell yourself, well, okay, everything's all right now, so anxiety be gone, you are no longer welcome. Understanding what that is and how to manage it is something a lot of people really do wrestle with, as you have. And it wasn't just I can click a switch and it's all gone now. It was a real process.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of like you have to learn new things and you have to unlearn old things as well. And a big theme of the book is, for me, it was anxiety. For others, it might be depression or worse. But it's this concept of managing anxiety, not beating it. I always thought for years I had this enemy that I was fighting and I had to beat because it felt that way. And, you know, it just has the ability to take over your whole world to the point where you almost debilitated. And you know, fortunately, I wasn't in that space for too long, but it was long enough for me to feel like this has to mean something. It's got to become something. I can't just live this way. I'm quite an ambitious guy. I'm very competitive as well. So I was competing with this thing the whole time. And the biggest learning for me was learning to understand it, to make friends with it, and to realize that, you know, anxiety is an emotional state, and it's something that we need. I mean, we feel anxiety when we're watching sport, as we know, and yet that feels good. But that is a form of anxiety. So I suppose it's just understanding that this thing is not all bad, but has the potential to really own your life. So yeah, that distinction has been key for me and hopefully for many others, where you learn to understand it, you learn its place, and ultimately it's just misplaced fight or flight. I mean, that is a human reaction, you know. I mentioned in the book as well about, you know, our brains weren't designed to make us happy. Like, that has to be a choice. But in the same way, you don't beat happiness and you don't beat sadness, you don't beat anxiety. You learn to understand it and you use it, you know, hopefully for the greater good. And if not, to protect yourself and to do what humans were born to do.
I will take issue with your suggestion that anxiety in sport is good always, as will anybody who's ever watched South Africa at a Cricket World Cup. And that's probably my chief source of anxiety over the years. I've been very lucky in that that's not a space that generally I've had anywhere near your sort of interaction with. Mm. But there are so many people who do. And you've come up with, and you discuss some of it in the book, your way of dealing with this, and I think that's it's a really helpful set of guidelines. Not everybody's will mirror how you dealt with it, but it shows first of all that it can be done, and it does give some really good instructive insight into, okay, here is this beast that's not going away. Mm-hmm. So how can we harness it? How can we make the best of a situation that at first glance looks to be really negative? So just at a very simple level, what are some of those day-to-day, this is how Brandon comes to grips with anxiety?
Yeah, I think the first thing that hopefully will be helpful is, I think what helped me a lot in the worst moments was just speaking to somebody who had gone through it, you know, with respect to some incredible doctors and psychologists and dietitians and people. I mean, I tried everything that was good, and it was extremely helpful. But there were just moments where I just needed my mom or a friend just to be like, you got this, man. Like, I know you're going through some stuff. And that's just that, like, feeling of just, no, biology, no textbook things. And there's a little bit of that in there, but I've tried to avoid it because it's really just a firsthand experience and perspective. And I'm hoping that that will resonate with a lot of people who are just in the battle right now. But getting to your second question, you know, there's a combination of things. There is a section where I write about what to do in a panic attack, and it's just sort of 10 steps of things that help me. But the more pressing thing was, you know, when you get to the enablers, as I call it in the book, of just looking at from a lifestyle perspective, what can you do to avoid getting into that moment of panic or that moment of low? You know, what are the sort of cycles we need to break? And a lot of it has to do with your sleep, your exercise, your nutrition. For me, movement was the biggest part of it. And I was always active. But I think once I began running, that really changed the game for me. And then I look at things like just gratitude and other sort of stoic philosophies and things like that that helped me, where just it was just a reframing of suffering and realizing that a lot of our pain and our trauma is not a detour from the path, but as I say, is the path itself. And I think it leads you to learnings and lessons that you would not have otherwise gotten through just an easy life. And yeah, so in the moment, obviously it's easy to say it now or easier to say it now, but the hardest moments have taught me the best lessons. And you know, just getting back to some of the principal things of what can you do ongoing that can just help, you know, improve your mental state to reduce the amount of times that you have this heightened fight or flight, bit of a tongue twister, and just reduce those moments of intense anxiety where that is always meant to be, but just not at the levels that it can be, that are kind of misplaced in the journey.
So watching the 2019 Rugby World Cup on repeat, but not the 2023, where the one-pointers did nothing for our collective state of anxiety.
Exactly.
That could have been the extent of the book, and it would have been a very good book, because you've been through this, you've dealt with it, it'll never quite go away, but it's become part of who you are, and you've embraced that, and brilliant. We've got a wonderful guide to how we can help to address our own anxiety, if that is a space with which we identify. But the universe had a little more in store for you, because they clearly realized, well, this guy, we haven't been able to beat him down with the anxiety. We haven't been able to beat him down with the heart. I tell you what, let's throw cancer at him, but let's tell him it's something else first and then come back and just make it as absolutely difficult as we possibly can. And this is another element where you've gone through something that a lot of people can have a touch point with. We've either been through cancer ourselves, or we have a family member, a good friend who's been in that space. You've had this, first of all, not knowing that you had it, then having to deal with it. And again, just this really, really difficult hurdle that you've had to deal with.
Yeah, listen, I often say that my life has been like a movie, but the jury is out as to what the genre is. We're not sure if it's a horror or a comedy or a drama. But the cancer diagnosis was quite a blow. I think that one hit me actually harder than the heart surgery, because the heart surgery was very corrective. It felt very like, okay, we're actually solving a problem now. And obviously the discovery of proper fitness after that has been an absolute gift of, wow, this is what I've been missing my whole life. But with that diagnosis, and again, the misdiagnosis, I mean, again, you know, how these things happen, I don't know why or how. And I suppose it's how you frame them and how you receive that news. On that day, I wasn't thinking about turning pain into purpose. I was literally thinking, woe is me. Surely I've had my big medical setback already. But yeah, the year before that was very confusing, because I was having issues with my gut. And without getting into too much detail, ended up going through multiple different scopes, every possible type that you can, saw different gastroenterologists. But the reality was, it was a misdiagnosis. So they said I had Crohn's disease for a year. So I changed my whole diet, cut out meat, had less dairy, started following more of a Mediterranean diet, did all those things, which was probably a good thing anyway for my health. Quite a good diet to follow in, you know, whatever situation you find yourself in. But that was a confusing time. And again, confusing of, okay, so we've got another battle to fight here. Like, what is the purpose behind this one? You know, like how and why? And then you kind of get to grips with it. We very quickly, on the day when I got that news, was very emotional. I was in the country, my wife and kids, we were living in the UK at the time, but I was in South Africa. Got quite emotional with my brother and my parents. And, you know, just it's a heavy word. You know, you don't know what it means. You don't know how long. You think imminent death. That was, to be honest, without being insensitive, that's what I think a lot of people think about when they hear that word. And then once I saw a really great oncologist, she was amazing with like her tone and her narrative and just like, you know, you got this. This is going to be good. Just so much more calming. Went through the actual PET scan, found out what level it was stage 2. kind of stage one, actually, so early stages, and went through a very successful treatment. But yeah, it was tough to learn that news, but probably tougher to have this confusion before of the symptoms that I was having in my gut and in my body, getting unwell at, you know, sporadic periods. And all the while trying to do that while living in an industry that advocates for health and fitness, you know, the irony was not lost on me. So you do at times feel like an imposter, I suppose, in that way. But what I always say is, like, I've got an appreciation for health that I wouldn't say few other people do, but it just gives you such a unique perspective and appreciation for the ability just to be outside, walking, running, doing the basics, and really just with a level of urgency and clarity that you need in terms of how you not just manage your health and fitness, but your life on a day-to-day basis. So now, past the fact, you know, grateful for these lessons, grateful for these opportunities, and just very aware of how quickly things can change for so many people out there.
To what degree did the anxiety you'd gone through post-heart operation and the learning to deal with that subsequently help you to deal with, I've just been diagnosed with cancer? That is a terrifying piece of news for anybody to get. There is so much unknown swirling about it. Were you, after the initial, oh my God, this is overwhelming, able to be a little steadier in your understanding of it because you'd had to teach yourself to deal with so much anxiety beforehand?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think by that stage, I wouldn't say, you know, I don't think anyone ever masters anxiety, but I was in a place where, okay, I recognize this feeling, I recognize this sensation. You're a lot more calmer in the face of adversity, but certainly more well-equipped, you know. And I think as you go through these things, not that I wish any hardship on anybody in that way, but each time you are faced with another one, you're almost like, okay, well, we kind of know this feeling of being tense. And the one thing you realize time and time again, and maybe we need these reminders, is you just cannot control tomorrow. You know, all you can do is focus on today, on the fact that you've got breath in your lungs and an ability to make a difference. And that's genuinely how I felt. You know, I'm careful not to kind of preach or sound holier than thou through these experiences to other people, because I realize some people are at a very pivotal moment, either in their health or just in their lives, in terms of having lost a loved one or split up with a partner or lost money or lost a business. You know, there's so many different things that people are going through. Mine was predominantly medical, and for the most part, corrective and improving and positive. But you have to decide in those moments what to do with that information, you know. And yes, we were emotional on the day, but shortly after that, there was just a switch that went off in my mind of, okay, game on. Like, this is, it's almost comical of, wow, like this, another thing. And I think in a way it gives you a calm of, well, there's nothing you can do anyway, you know. So it's like, you're going to mope about it. You're going to dwell in that moment. And obviously in the year, even in the treatment in the 6 months that followed, you know, there's still some very clear lows where you have days of just let it out and express what you're feeling and what you're thinking, but then get back to your game plan. The game plan is, let's fight this head on. And I've been very fortunate. I've had amazing treatments. I've been blessed to be with really good doctors, and you know, not everybody has those extra advantages. So as much as this has been a harrowing story, I've probably far more advantage than others, with a loving family, with a support group, with a wife and two boys who have had to navigate this with me. And that gives you your why and your source of strength. So, yeah, but getting back to your question, every time you go through something different, you certainly are more well-equipped, and how you frame it becomes everything. So what we actually did was I said to my brother, let's open a bottle of champagne. And he was like, okay, man, like, maybe this isn't the only problem here. Maybe there's other mental issues here. But the message was clear. It was like, I wrote a message to myself, and there's a picture of it in the book you might have seen, where I said, congratulations, future brand, from current self, or something silly like that. And it was just a moment. And, you know, that doesn't mean it solves all your problems, but it was just a line in the sand of, we're going to take this thing head on. And I was congratulating myself and the family and celebrating the future victory, not knowing if there would be one and what it would look like. And I think that helped. It's not the thing that's going to cure your problems, and it just sounds like a nice little story. But for me, I had to decide early on, and with everything in life, like, what is my approach going to be here? Naturally, you're just a human, and you're going to feel these things, and they're hard. But you have to develop a game plan, and you have to really think about, okay, how are we going to tackle this thing?
It was a striking vote of faith in yourself, and an act of self-belief that was so important. And it comes in the the space of something I really identified with in your story. Yes, I might not have been through the anxiety, but particularly when you have a public profile of sorts and through the prism of Instagram, life always looks amazing and you're traveling the world and hanging out with cool people and drinking great wine and playing golf. And I do have a life I love, and I'm very lucky and I'm very, very grateful for it. But there are days when things aren't going quite so well. And yes, you're doing a great event, but your daughter's got a piano concerto or your son's playing a football match, and you've got those low points. And it's understanding that you cannot let those define you, and that they are part of just being a person, of being human. And I think your understanding of that, granted yours were a little darker at times than many others, but having that understanding that, you know what, this is actually just part of the journey of life, and you cannot let that be the definitive point of when you hit that low.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think your point is so valid in terms of the life we see, not just on Instagram, but just in the public eye of people who have a lot of money or famous or, you know, professional athletes or musicians or bands, all this sort of stuff. There's a lot of work that goes into getting to that level. So, you know, it fascinates me how the mind works, how they approach life in that limelight, and even in the performance of their daily tasks or their functions. And that's the biggest thing of part of why I really stepped up the urgency of writing the book, was like to move it from this diary to an actual piece of work, was just having conversations with different people at multiple levels, you know, senior business people to professional athletes where we are privileged to play and work with. And realizing as you started to say certain things, there would be a little switch and you would just see them go a little bit quieter, a little bit more intently, the way they listen and lean in and start to have conversations around stuff where they suddenly start to slip out little secrets and thoughts of their own. Where you're like, okay, again, it was validating of you're not alone, and people that you would never, ever expect are possibly facing some of the worst types of anxiety. And even if it's not anxiety specifically, just mental health challenges in terms of the life they lead. And especially if it's very public, you know, that's not easy. It's not everyone wants to be famous. We all want to have as many views as we can on Instagram. And these are great tools. I'm not damning social media, but I do speak about it as a potential disabler when it comes to battling mental health. Like, it's not a great place to be if you're still trying to figure out yourself. If you're young, I mean, my kids are definitely not getting social media, at least until 16, if I can delay it even further. And even my own life, I've got to be careful how long I stay on there, because it just shows you everybody's best life. And up until recently, only now are we starting to see more people being a little bit more vulnerable. I think there's a limit as well. Like, I'm not a bigger fan of, you know, the crying on camera just for the sake of showing that emotion. I think there's an element of privacy that you've also got to respect. But yeah, it's one of those things where you could revere somebody, people in my own business, where you're like, well, that's the CEO, or that's this and this and the next thing. And they're just humans, you know, and often are going through the most, probably more than anyone would imagine. So nobody's immune, I suppose, is the point.
You've got the book. It is a terrific, terrific read, and I highly recommend it. And it tells this incredible story. Of course, now you're an author, you're going to have to write more books. So you're going to need to do things like crash a helicopter into a mountain and single-handedly save 11 people and some puppies while you escape through a snowstorm. And we'll see all of those to come. But you've also now more than earned the right to enjoy this journey going forward, and to revel in a space that I think at a number of times over the last couple of decades, you probably thought, well, that's not going to be there. I'm not going to be around, because I've got this heart issue. I've got the cancer. There was a blood issue as well. You've had all of these things, which people will discover in the book. And so if you look ahead to the next 15, 20, 25 years, what is it that excites you most about just the opportunity to live that maybe wasn't always on your horizon?
Yeah, definitely. I certainly do appreciate every day more than I ever have. And fortunately, you know, the cancer is clear. The surgery was a success. These have all been really great stories. And it's just, it changes again. It's that peace and that clarity of, you know, if you want to do something, you got to do it today, because tomorrow is not guaranteed, firstly. But I certainly am excited about not just every day, but the opportunity just to make a difference. Like, and I don't want to sound like Mother Teresa here, but I genuinely believe that humans are here to serve one another. You know, even in the work that you're doing, we discussed earlier, the Laureus Awards and the things that you're involved in there. And that really inspires me when people have an influence and are able to impact change. This for me is just a conversation starter. I'm not playing it down, but it's just to get more people to speak about mental health, to be more vulnerable. And it doesn't mean you must write a book or get on a podcast and tell the world every single deepest, darkest fear and feeling, but just have more conversations, you know, even if it's in complete privacy with a loved one, with a psychologist, with a mentor, with a coach, with a colleague. But the ability to just have another day to work towards something greater than ourselves and to lean into some of those opportunities with more urgency. Because for many years, I was just like, I always had this. I came from a family of very, like, we wanted to do good things and just make a difference. And my grandparents were like that, just incredible people, so kind and generous. And so I've been very fortunate to have that as my base of to view how to live life. But yeah, to answer the question, like, what excites me is just to be able to step up the pace of making a change, especially in South Africa, where we have a plethora of issues and challenges and colorful, you know, situations to get involved in, and just to be a little light in the world, really. So the other part of what I'm excited about is I do definitely intend to write a second book, more of a sports performance element, so less around anxiety in particular. So I'll definitely ring you up because I know you've got some contacts in that world. But certainly a Hell Inside Our Head sports edition. But again, this for me is not, you know, you don't write books to make money. It's to make a difference and to start conversations and to leave something on the earth that's a little bit of a legacy that can hopefully just change someone's mind about how they're approaching things.
I'm seeing you more as sort of the fourth edition of 50 Shades of Grey, but we'll see what emerges in the next book. I'm reminded of my very, very dear friend Adam Cooper, who lives in New Zealand. So I phone him regularly at the moment when rugby matches have been played. Yeah. And his wife, Penny, will ask him if he'd like to mow the lawn, and he will come up with a good reason why he can't at this exact moment. And she will then suggest that, well, maybe that would give them some time to talk about their feelings. And 30 seconds later, he is out mowing the lawn. And it's said with jest, but talking, especially as men in South Africa, it's not something we do naturally. And of the many takeaways from a fabulous book, I hope that it gets more of these conversations happening and that people understand that vulnerability is not the weakness that it's often seen as, and that we do often have a lot more people than we realize who are more than happy to help us through the darker times that all of us inevitably will go through, just some a few more than others, which makes the story a triumph, it makes the book a delight, and it makes the time spent with you a great honour. So, Brandon, thank you. I'm going to bring you along to visit one of our Laureus Sport for Good projects because you have a zest for life and an inherent kindness that is exactly what we need in an often very trying world at the moment. And I shall look forward to having you back on the show when book number two comes out.
Absolutely. Thank you, Dan. Thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity.
There we go. From open heart surgery at 28 to being misdiagnosed and then diagnosed with cancer, dealing with chronic anxiety, and yet still big smile on face. One of, I didn't mention this, one of the top amateur elite athletes in Johannesburg. He's probably overtaken you on his bicycle going uphill while you've been driving. But most importantly, somebody with this terrific story to tell, a story that's had many, many challenges to it, but challenges from which we can all learn and from which his experience can hopefully give us a shoulder to lean on when we need it. It's out in exclusive books as well as other bookstores around the country, but quickly, I suspect will be sold out rather fast. It is The Hell Inside Our Heads, the author, my special guest on The Dan Nicholl Show this week, Brandon Fairweather.
You're listening to The Dan Nicholl Show.